Good morning. Welcome to Digging the Dirt. My guest today is farmer, master gardener, Teresa Retzloff.
Sadly, slightly lapsed master gardener.
Teresa Retzloff. And today we're going to talk about seeds, all things seed related. Morning.
Good morning, Anne. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to have you here. So, also, you are going to be one of the featured speakers at the Spring Garden Seminar of the Master Gardeners.
I am, yeah. I'm going to be doing that. Well, Spring Garden Seminar is going to be pretty exciting this year. The Master Gardeners decided they wanted the focus of the whole event to be on food. I think it's called Food, Glorious Food as the theme. And so they decided to partner up with North Coast Food Web, which is a local community food organization that I work part-time for. And so Food Web and Master Gardeners are working to make Spring Garden Seminar all about food. And so myself and a fellow farmer, Kelly Huckestein, are going to be doing a presentation about appropriate varieties to grow in our region. And then we're also going to be having somebody talk about building healthy soils. There's going to be food demonstrations, kind of cooking, preserving, how to store food. And it's a really cool day. It's on April 11th, so save that date. I'll share what knowledge I have. I mean, it's still trial and error, I think. learning how to grow in this climate, the coast is such a challenge in many ways. And starting from seed is also challenging, and I think that's one of the things that's so important to talk to people about. And I really love it when people do start things from seed, because there's a lot of things that are easy.
Well, wait a minute. You said it's hard to grow from seed. It's mostly not hard to grow from seed.
Well, I think it depends on your comfort level. And I think for a lot of people, like, a seed packet is mysterious. If it's not something that you grew up doing, you don't really understand. And the possibilities for failure are huge, but the possibilities for success are also huge. It's just that you have to pay attention to a few key things, or you might not get anything germinating. Then it's a disappointing experience, and you think, oh, I can't grow from seed. But if you're paying attention to a few key things, it can be really successful. So seeds, what you say is seeds mostly need to germinate moisture and warmth. I think light isn't the key thing for them to germinate. It's moisture and warmth. So you don't want to start them in a super cold place.
Okay.
And you don't want to start them in totally dry soil.
Okay. So let's talk about, let's see, maybe someone who doesn't feel confident at all, maybe has never started things mm-hmm. from seeds. What would be a good thing to start with?
I think there's, depending on if you're wanting to start things to grow as like a transplant to make a little plant that you're then going to put out in the garden, or whether you want to grow directly in the garden. If you want to sow direct in your garden, you need to make sure you're waiting until the weather's appropriate for sowing those seeds. But good things.
You mean like last week wouldn't have been good?
Well, potentially, but then you have these seeds germinating, and now it's going to be all cold and wet again. And so those little plants that are just germinating, they don't want to be out in the cold and wet right now. It's way too early for some of those things. So right now, the seeds, if you're starting seeds right now, it's generally starting them indoors in some kind of protected environment for things that you're then going to sow to plant outside later.
Isn't it a bit early for anything anywhere?
Not for some things. I think a lot of farmers right now are sowing onion seeds. Some early brassica seeds like kales and things like that that you want to have a transplant for to put out in March then you would have, viable plants that you're harvesting from in April or May. So,
so if you really want to get an early jump on it, because in March you can put those seeds out in the ground and mm-hmm. in the garden and they'll just go right.
But unless if you're starting from a transplant, you're that much further ahead.
Okay.
It kind of depends on your situation. If you don't have a good way to start seeds inside, then don't do it.
So what are we talking about? You need some pots or a tray with
It kind of depends. There's a lot of different things you can do. Catalogs will sell all number of fancy setups. But I've also seen people start seeds in egg cartons or start them in plastic takeout containers with a little plastic lid, which you need to poke holes in for air circulation. But they're in drainage so that they don't get waterlogged and die. But there's a lot of different ways that you can use recycled materials or old, seed flats, anything that will hold soil.
What's the best kind of soil material to use?
Yeah. Well, generally speaking, what you start seeds in is a sterile mix. You don't want, it depends. Some people start in potting soil. Some people start in, and it's usually some combination of peat moss and perlite.
But it's not garden soil.
It's not garden soil. You wouldn't go dig up from your garden. And the reason you don't do that is because there's a lot of bacteria in your soil, good bacteria and sometimes
fungus,
bad bacteria.
Fungus. Not good fungus.
No. And so generally with a lot of seeds, you want to start them in a clean, sterile environment. If you're using pots, if you're reusing pots, you want to wash them. And make sure they're really clean.
It's really nice when you put them in the warm, soapy water in the sink. They mm-hmm. look so much better.
They look better, but also they're clean. Well, so if that whatever plant was in that pot, if it had any disease or bacteria or anything, you want to make sure that that's washed off before you start a new plant in it because it could be susceptible to that. Mm-hmm. Tongue-tied mm-hmm. this morning. So just creating the good environment, and that's mm-hmm. just a little bit of reading and research that you do. Just prepare yourself if you want to start seeds inside. And then again, it's a warm spot. Some people have, there's heat mats that you can buy to start mm-hmm. plants on. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have that if you've got a nice warm spot in your house that's consistently warm. A lot of seeds like to germinate, you know, around, you know, the high 60s, 70 degrees. So think about that.
What about if you had like a register on the floor where the heat's coming through or some like warm?
You know, it would really depend on how hot it is there. That could also really dry plants out.
Oh, it could be too dry. Okay.
So, you know, again, it's like finding the right spot.
Mm-hmm.
They do need moisture.
Well, you know, I have heat mats and uh-huh. they really accelerate the
They do.
Growing.
They make a huge difference. They really do. And a lot of farmers will use heat mats mm-hmm. to germinate seeds on because you just get a consistent bottom heat and that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And
they don't have to be under lights at this point.
They don't.
Because they don't have any green. You don't need light until you have chlorophyll.
Yeah.
Leaves.
But once they germinate, that's when light becomes really important. And that's okay. where I think a lot of home gardeners really struggle because even if you've got the sunniest of sunny windowsills,
mm-hmm.
Little seedlings need very bright light to grow strong. They need it consistent. And often they need it for like, you know, 12 to 16 hours a day, which this time of year, we just don't really have. And if you get these cloudy, overcast days, the plants are really going to struggle to get enough light to grow strong. And what you get are seedlings that are what are called leggy. They're those kind of tall, spindly seedlings that are kind of weak, and they don't do very well. They're not strong. Oftentimes, when you then go to transplant them outside, they don't have as good a survival rate because they're just not strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so right. that's
where
this, yeah, and what they're doing is reaching for the sun.
Mm-hmm.
They're reaching for light, and that's why they get so long and thin and spindly. And so you're starting then with a plant that's not as healthy, not as strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's the only situation that you have, I would either look at, you know, trying to build yourself a little tiny like cold frame or a greenhouse outside where you could maybe get more consistent light and put a heat mat in there. Or just, you know, stick with transplants until the weather gets better where you could sow seed directly outside. Because, you know, ultimately all the time and energy you put into creating that seedling that's going to be leggy and weak, you know, you're just not going to get a good mm-hmm. result with
mm-hmm.
it. And that's where I think a lot of people have heartbreak with starting seeds and just think, oh, it doesn't work for me. It's because you have to really think about all those environmental factors.
We used to struggle with that year after year. And then we bought a bunch of fluorescent lights that mm-hmm. have this big stand.
Yep.
We have the heat mats, the mm-hmm. the trays with the
yeah,
good
with the grow lights, yeah.
soil.
And with the lights, you want to keep the lights, you
close.
Know, if you close like a couple of inches above the plant, and that seems really,
and then you keep moving them up.
You do as the plants grow. And what you get if you do that, if you're willing to invest in that kind of a setup, you get these very sturdy, healthy seedlings.
You get nice, fat,
yeah.
strong stems.
And then once you're ready to put them outside, and then the transition to outside also is important. You don't want to take those seedlings that you've been kind of coddling along, babying in your beautiful indoor spa environment, and then just immediately stick them outside. That can be way too much of a shock for some plants. And so there's a process called hardening off, where you take your seedlings and you gradually start to acclimate them to the outside. And it can be, you know, if you've got a lot of seedlings, that can be kind of a pain, but you want to gradually transition them. So maybe set them outside, you know, on a nice day and then bring them in at night and do that for a few days and then just gradually leave them out overnight and just let them get used to the idea of being outdoors because it's a bit of a shock. I mean, think about it. If someone just suddenly shoved you out the door right now, how happy would you feel, you know, sitting there shivering all night
especially
long?
With no coat.
No coat, buck naked, sitting out there all day long and you adjust. You know, you're going to shiver a little bit and be unhappy and probably not fare very well, and neither will your plants. So you just have to pay attention to these things, and then you can have a very successful experience. You know, again, it's just, it kind of depends on how much time and energy you're willing to invest. The advantage to starting things from seed is that you have a lot more choice. There's amazing seed catalogs out there. I have a stack of them sitting here on my lap. Nice. I've been like pouring over the seed catalogs for the last, you know, couple months that they've been arriving. And there's so many amazing varieties out there to grow. And when you're limited to what a nursery is growing or a farm is growing or whatever, you know, that store is offering you as a plant start, you know, they've already made a selection of what they're going to either grow or buy to sell to you. And so your choice is a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to the catalogs and you can buy seed, you can try some phenomenal varieties.
Well, you know, even taking that another step to the food choices. Mm-hmm. If you go to the grocery store and buy broccoli, 90% of the broccoli in the United States is one variety.
Mm-hmm.
If you grow broccoli from seed,
yeah,
what, 30, 40, 50 varieties of broccoli?
You've got a lot more choices. You do. And, you know, and you also get to experience that fresh taste. I mean, there's something about like, certain plants when you harvest them from your own garden.
They're unbelievable.
I mean, there's nothing. I mean, my farm can't even compete with that. I mean, if you're walking out your back door and snapping a pea off a vine and putting it in your mouth or pulling a carrot out of the ground and eating it right in that moment, that is the freshest that you're ever going to taste that plant. It's amazing. And having that experience is wonderful. It's a really great way to experience how good food can taste.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just food, flowers. I mean, there's some beautiful flowers out there available, wonderful things that bees and pollinators are going to love. They'll add beauty and gorgeousness to your garden. And, you know, you're not going to find them as a plant start in a nursery. You got to get a packet of seeds and throw it out there. And so there's a lot of options for people who are willing to try and start exploring.
You know, the last 2 weeks, I have seen a number of bees.
Yeah.
I was in Manzanita.
In those warm days.
Yes. Yeah. In Manzanita, I saw a bunch of bees on flowering rosemary.
Yeah.
And I was amazed that
there were
daffodils and rosemary,
yeah,
and primroses were blooming in Manzanita 2 weeks ago.
It's been a warm winter. It really has. I mean, the fear is that, you know, you get this warm burst early on, and then, you know, we've had snow at the end of February, March, and not too distant past. So it could turn bad really quickly, and that's a challenge. It's just nice that there are some things blooming for the bees that are coming out on those warm days.
One of the things I don't quite get is the things that think that they want to bloom right now. We have a plum tree.
That's trying to bloom.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
It's only one. The rest of them are behaving.
Yeah.
But a lot of things are trying to bud. I mean,
there's a lot of bud break right now, and and it is a concern. And I think for a lot of fruit growers, it is a big concern, because if you get those blooms that come out too early, again, if they're blooming before the bees are really present,
no
then
pollination.
You're not getting pollination. Mm. And you can really get a lot of damage if you get this beautiful bloom and then there's a massive storm that comes through.
Mm.
So that is challenging. And that, you know, that to me, that also takes us back to seeds, because you know, the lesson that I've learned in the, you know, over now decade that I've lived on the Oregon coast and been growing on the Oregon coast is it's not worth it to try and start too early. There's this huge push, this huge rush, like, oh, I got to get my seeds in the ground really, really early. You know, unless you're trying to beat all of your competitors to market, or you want to be the person on your street with the snap peas the earliest, and that matters to you, you know, great, okay, do it. But if you want a healthy garden, there's plenty of time. Don't freak out. There's plenty of time to do it. And it's better to start a little bit on the later side and be assured of steadier weather than to start too early. And then you're putting seeds into cold, wet ground. You get rot, you get slugs, you get... there's been some years where I've had people finally coming to market to buy plant starts for snap beans from me. And they were on their third sowing of bean seeds. And every single one of them rotted because it was wet. And finally, they're like, I just have to start with transplants. I'm done.
Right, they give up.
And, you know, it's...
And of course, now it's almost May, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and again, it's not that you can't get a good crop of beans, but you just have to be patient and wait. Mm-hmm. You want the soil to be not super freezing cold and not super wet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to be patient.
It is. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. You're listening to Digging the Dirt, and we'll be right back. Thank you. listening to Dig in the Dirt on Coast Community Radio, and you were just listening to Every Time It Starts to Rain. Lyle Strickland, right. We thought that fits us to a T.
Yeah, it's not done raining yet. And I have to remember to be grateful for that, because we do need the rain.
We need the rain, and we actually do need the temperatures to drop, because there's no snowpack.
Yep. And these are big factors that are going to affect, what our growing season is going to be like. I mean, last year was very sunny and warm. We had a pretty dry, warm summer, which in some ways was great. A lot of things really loved it. A lot of things didn't like it. And I think that probably most gardeners found that they had to water a lot more to keep their gardens going than maybe we're used to. Mm-hmm. So those are just things to be aware of. I mean, I don't know what the summer is going to be like. It's really interesting. I'm just trying to prepare for things. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, every year it's a whole different deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So did we get a question? Yeah.
No.
Anyway, so one of the things that I wanted to talk about with seeds is that we in Oregon in the Northwest, Oregon and Washington, we have some great local sources for seeds now. There's a lot of smaller seed companies that are getting into growing and selling seed. And what's cool about that is that these are farmers, seedsmen, seeds people that are really trying to select varieties that do well in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. And what's great about that is that we do have a pretty challenging growing environment out here. And a lot of the bigger seed companies are based, in Maine or Vermont or on the East Coast or things like that. And that's great. And they offer some wonderful varieties. And I don't mean to talk down about them. I buy seeds from them too. But it's really cool that there are some small sources for seed out here too. And I just want to mention a few for people to check out. Mm-hmm. There's a great seed company that I've been buying a lot of seed from recently called Adaptive Seeds. And they are based in Sweet Home, Oregon. Andrew Still and his wife Sarah, the people who own this, are amazing people, really wonderful seed growers. They grow a lot of the seed themselves, and then they source from other small farms regionally. Also Wild Garden Seed, which is down in Philomath. And they do a lot with brassicas, really wonderful kale and lettuce varieties. Frank Morton and his wife who own that are just phenomenal lettuce growers. If you're a lettuce freak like I am, I have a lettuce problem. I love lettuce. And there's so many varieties. I can't buy enough. I have to stop, but I have to, I can't buy enough lettuce seeds. There's one up in Washington, which is great, called Siskiyou Seeds. And, they're in Oregon too. Williams, Oregon. Sorry, Siskiyou. This must be Uprising that's in Washington. I'm sorry, I'm just looking at my catalogs now and I absolutely can't see their address. So Uprising Seeds is the one that's based in Washington. And these are all really great smaller seed companies. The people owning the seed companies are growing some of the seed themselves, and then they are sourcing from other small farms. And so these are all people that are breeding seeds in our region, that are selecting seeds that do well in our varieties. And why that's important is that these are varieties that are likely to do well in your garden. We do have these. It's a long growing season, but it's cooler and wetter. And here on the coast, we have challenges that people in the valleys don't have. And so even within the varieties that, or what do well in the Pacific Northwest, you still want to look for varieties that are going to do well in our region. And so you want things that what they call short season varieties a lot of times that have. When you look at a lot of seed catalogs, they'll talk about days to maturity. There'll be a number under the seed variety. And days to maturity is a pretty random, tricky number. And there's some interesting research starting at OSU, I think in the near future, to really try to look at those numbers and try and understand more about that. Because what that is oftentimes from the day that if you start from a transplant, you put a transplant in the ground, how many growing days does it take for you to get a mature crop from it?
It's not from putting the seed in the ground.
Well, I think that's unclear to some people, and it's unclear even to me. And I think that what they're looking at is a better way to categorize that and help people understand what's going to do well in your garden. What I would say is that if you want to use days to maturity as a guideline, and it's a loose guideline, it's not going to be, it doesn't promise that, 45 days from you sowing that seed, you're going to have a head of lettuce.
Oh, it doesn't?
Because where did that number come from? Whose farm was that determined on? What region was that plant grown in? That wasn't necessarily determined on the Oregon coast. And so for us, the rule of thumb, what I look for is shorter days to maturity, regardless of what that days to maturity is. So if I'm looking for a winter squash, I'm looking for a winter squash that's going to mature. You know, I think the best you can get is maybe like, you know, 70 to 80 days. You don't want to try growing one that's like 120 days to maturity. That's just a heartbreaker. Same with tomatoes. If you want to start tomatoes from seed or any of those heat lovers, some of the squash, zucchinis and things like that, some of them just have a really long time that they need to grow. And what'll happen is that they're going to be starting to mature late in the summer, early fall, when our weather's starting to turn, it's starting to get cold and wet, and it's just going to be
miserable.
Yes. So you want to think about those things.
Okay, so in the early end, let's talk about peas, both sweet peas and eating peas.
How do you start yours? Do you sow directly or do you do transplants?
I do both. Mm-hmm. I have had luck with both and I've had failures with both.
Mm-hmm.
I like to start my peas really early outside, mm-hmm. and sometimes they rot.
Yeah.
And sometimes as soon as they sprout, the birds come and eat them all.
Yep. We've had that happen.
Yeah. You know, last year I had a lot of sweet peas come up and they disappeared and I don't know what happened to them. And I had none.
You know, one of the things, I've had that problem with sweet peas as well, and I honestly think that slugs get them, like those little small slugs, mm-hmm. you know, and again, you're not seeing them, but I was having terrible problems with my sweet peas last year, and it was a slug problem, slug and birds and other things that are just voraciously hungry that time of year when you're offering up these amazing, tender, sweet, yummy things for them. So that the birds are a big problem. They really can be a big problem for both peas and beans. That early germination, when you just get that beautiful sprout coming out of the ground, the birds just key in on that. And you can use, you know, scare tape. I finally had to start netting some of our sowings to try and just get them mm-hmm. up big enough that they could fight off a little bit of, of, you know, plucking from the birds. Mm-hmm. But I had birds coming and just stripping the leaves of the peas.
Oh, I just have them pick up the whole thing, mm-hmm. take the pea, the root, the stem, goodbye, the whole
thing. If that seems to be a problem in your garden, you can do things from transplants. The key with doing transplants for both peas and beans is that you don't want them to be really root bound. So you want it to have a root system, like maybe just enough that it's kind of holding the root ball together in the container that it's in, but not so tightly bound up that the plant is under some stress.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you know, it's kind of tricky. Having said that, I've planted some peas that were pretty root bound, and you just kind of gently untwine their roots, put them in the ground, and they've done just fine. But
okay,
that's just rule of thumb.
How soon, if you were just going to direct sow peas, I know that there's a traditional Lincoln's birthday to plant, and I don't know where that is, but I think I grew up with that.
President's Day, I think,
Used
to be Lincoln's birthday, I know. And now it's consolidated into President's Day.
Which could
it's
be...
It's soon. You know, I've never sown my peas that early because of the reasons that you talk about. The soil's too cold, it's too wet, and they're going to germinate, and the birds are going to get them.
So maybe a couple weeks later at the beginning of March?
Yeah, I would sow them, you know, mid-March.
Mid-March. Oh, that's like a whole month later.
It kind of depends. When do you, I mean, are you desperate for those? Does it make a difference? What you find a lot of times is because the soil is so cold and wet, the plants aren't going to grow very fast anyway. And a really interesting thing, and I would, you know, if you're curious about this, maybe try an experiment this year and sow some seeds in early February, mid-February, and then sow another batch in mid-March and see what the difference is in when you actually harvest. It may just be a week at most. Sometimes it's around the same time.
Oh.
So you may not be gaining that much mm-hmm. by sowing early.
Okay, scientific experiment.
But I would try this because, again, it's going to be different depending on your garden, depending on what your soil's like. If you have really cold, wet soil, it's probably going to be more true for you. If you have really, you know, sandier soil that drains well, maybe stays warmer,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on where your microclimate is
mm-hmm.
in our region,
mm-hmm.
it could be a very different story for you. So if you're curious about that, I would try some experiments and see. And you might save yourself some heartbreak and effort and seed costs by not sowing early.
Mm-hmm.
Some people it works for, and that's great. If it works for you, that's the thing. If it works for you in your garden, that's great. Keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't let me or Anne or anybody else tell you that you're wrong. If that's your experience, that's fantastic. Nobody knows your garden better than you do.
And you might have a wonderful little microclimate that's more protected and warmer, and maybe you have fewer slugs. I've been doing a lot of weeding the last few weeks, and I have taken out tons of slugs out of my garden.
Because they love those big broad-leafed weeds that they love to hide underneath them. So that's great slug habitat.
So I'm thinking that maybe I have fewer slugs now.
I sure hope so. That's always good. You're never going to get totally rid of your slugs. And that is actually something to really be aware of. If you are direct seeding outside in the garden, when those little seeds germinate, and those are very tiny little seedlings, they are extremely vulnerable to slugs at that point. And, sometimes people think that their seeds don't germinate, and really what's happened is they've germinated and the slugs have just come in that night, mowed them down, and they're gone. And you think, what happened? This was a brand new packet of seeds. Why didn't they show up? And so it can behoove you to get a little, there's a non-toxic slug repellent, slug bait. It's an iron phosphate granule. It's sold under a number of different commercial names like Sluggo or Escargot. And what I've started to do is actually put that out before I'm going to seed an area and start to try and, get the slugs out beforehand. And then definitely put some of that out if you've got seeds germinating, because that can make a big difference for survival. Again, it's just trying to get those seedlings up and above where they can withstand a little predation.
Well, we also use it when we put little fragile transplants out because we don't want them to be.
It can happen too.
Yeah. I know. We make a little circle around it.
Yeah.
And hopefully they eat
that. Fingers crossed. I know. Right. I hope people will start from seed because it's a really exciting process.
Well, the other thing is the cost. Mm-hmm. You get a ton of seeds. I mean, it's way more broccoli in that broccoli package or lettuce in that than you could possibly eat. And in fact, if you want to
store them.
But do successive plantings.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like every 2 weeks you're going to plant more lettuce.
Yeah.
That's going to take you all the way through the summer. That one packet for a dollar or
absolutely.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. That's a really great way of extending your crop. And then if you do have more seed that you need to use in a year, just store it in an airtight container, out of sunlight, in a cool place.
What we didn't talk about is open pollinated and
We are so out of time, though.
Oh, poo. All right.
There's a lot to learn about seeds. Just explore it. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience.
It is.
Have fun. Happy seed starting.
Yes. That sounds good. So we should have a program and talk about that.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Teresa.
Thanks, Anne.
My guest has been Teresa Retzlaff. You can find her
at 46 North Farm. If people have questions, you can email me at info@46northfarm.com, and I'm happy to answer them.
Awesome. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Anne Goldine. Talk to you in a week. Have a great one.